Yeah, I think you don't have to like go out and invent a new product, right? Or a new service line, or like it doesn't, you don't have to be like the company that comes out to do drones to clean solar panels. Like you can start off cleaning solar panels and getting on the roof and then expand. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It was so funny because I was in the product space and the software space for so long, and you've got these brilliant entrepreneurs like coming out with these new concepts and new ideas to automate and do all these things, but you don't have to do all that. Like you can go into the roofing or the HVAC space. Like
Hey everyone, welcome back to Business Aspirin, the podcast where we try to navigate business pains and help you avoid them. I'm your host, Clint Janelle, and today I have with us James Wolfgang Kuntz with Terrytown Roofing out of Austin. James, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well.
Good, man. So great to have you on, a fellow Texan on the podcast to chat about home services and life and all the things. So what's the weather like in Austin right now?
It's actually a little bit cooler today. It's like that fake fall right before it actually does cool off, and then it gets hot for several weeks or months before the holidays. Sometimes then cool off till January. But yeah, it's a nice day today.
I woke up and walked outside this morning and it was like cool. It wasn't cold, but it was like not hot. This is what we normally deal with around this time of the year. I'm like, okay, it's officially fall. It's supposed to actually be cooling off. So we'll see what happens. So let's talk a little bit about James and how you got into, home services, where you came from, what you were doing, what led to home services, and getting into the roofing space.
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of full background. I grew up in Houston, Texas. Went to Memorial High School, Spring Branch Middle School, right? And I think it was while I was in middle school, my grandfather and my dad shipped me off to a cattle ranch that we had in Mexico in Coahuila, and went out there, worked with the cowboys, right? Didn't know like a Spanish or anything about cowboying, right? So went out there, got to connect with those folks, and I had a little handheld, dictionary, and kind of learn certain words before others, right? And
Google Translate wasn't a thing at that time, right?
it was not a thing, right? So you learn a lot of body language and things like that, and you have to earn the respect of these guys, otherwise you're just a whittle, right? Kind of coming in and trying to learn their trade. And so, they took a lot of pride in that. And, that stuck with me through my other job roles and responsibilities in my career. And so I went logistics. So I graduated University of Texas with an economics and minor in business. Went to work for a logistics company, succeeded in that business. Was in carrier customer sales, went and worked for several fintech companies and financial service companies. And while I was doing all of that, I was doing real estate investing. And I was at one of these conferences, and one of the guys was hiring for a chief sales officer for his roofing and solar company. So I took that opportunity. I didn't like kind of what I was doing really presently in the tech roles, and so wanted to provide a service, right? Something that people needed, not like I need to have, not a want to have. And found roofing. After that company, I went and worked for one of the largest re-roofing companies in the United States. Was a top sales rep there, and then saw that there was a better way, right? There with more documented processes, what we call SOPs, right? More systemization, leverage what I learned from cowboying Mexico, from what I learned to working for some of these high growth venture capital private equity backed software companies. And that's what we've done with Terrytown Roofing. We want to listen to our people, right? Hire people smarter than us in each of their respective areas, and then just listen to them, and then just let it ride. We're high growth, and we're focusing on the people, then the organization, and then every one of our clients, and servicing them to the highest level.
Nice. Now you guys do both commercial and residential, right?
That's correct. With that, the name Terrytown Roofing, if you know anything about Austin or Austin history, like Terrytown's, kind of very affluent neighborhood, and we identified like who's our ideal customer profile, right? And folks that live in Terrytown, if you're in a $1.5 million home on the low end, to north of $30 million home, like it's very likely that you own and operate a business, right? Or you're a C-level executive. And so if we can show people that, this is kind of our mantra too, it's like if we can do the little things well, those things compound and lead to larger results and separate yourself from the competition. But if we can do that residential roof repair, right, or that roof replacement on home in Terrytown, well, hell, we can do one on a residential property in Temple or Killeen, or we can, you know, do the larger re-roof, right, on sure. on a warehouse or, you know, a flat commercial building.
Sure. Okay, so let's go back to the upbringing, right? Let's talk a little mm-hmm. bit about, you said that they shipped you off to a cattle ranch in Mexico that you guys had. Was that a family business in Mexico?
Yeah, it was a family business, and you know, as most of you guys know now, there's not a lot of money in the cattle business, right? Sure. There used to be, right? Unless you're vertically integrated, but yeah, we had a pretty good sized ranch out there. We had one in Eagle Pass, Texas, that we no longer have. We no longer have either of these ranches, but yeah, just trying to learn the trade, right? You know, salvage what we could and go out there. You know, it was kind of like a rite of passage my dad and grandfather, you know, went through, my great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather. So it was an interesting time. And, you know, when you're in middle school, high school, right, is, you know, especially nowadays, right, like having that stillness did a lot for me. Having that, seeing that work ethic, right, and the pride that these folks were taking in that day-to-day business was great.
What a lesson. I mean, I like that story to me. I'm like, so it resonates a little bit with me. My grandfather worked on Lee Campbell Ranch in Stephenville, mm-hmm. which, you know, I got to go help him. And, you know, just there was camaraderie and community, and there was a lot of hard work, and everybody got together and they ate together and had meals together, and you learned and listened. And so, like, I mean, what a lesson to be able to go out there and to do that. And then to deal with the hardness of it. Like, that was hard, right? I mean, not speaking Spanish with these guys, knowing they couldn't kill you because, you know, they worked for your family. I mean, they had to keep you there and teach you and grow. Talk about the value of that time and lesson in you can do hard things and you can grow and you can develop and you can push through scenarios.
Yeah, I think if your life is just full of, you know, handouts and, you know, trust funds and, you know, all of these things, and you're just not brought up the right way, right? Where you have to go and mow the grass, right? To get the 20 bucks, right? To, you know, then go hang out with your friends and, you know, all of those things. You don't really know what to do with like wealth in the future, right? It's all about the process. Right. And when you do hard things, it, you know, applies pressure and it just makes you a better overall person. Now, some people take that pressure, right? And then they're like, I can't handle it. And they turn to drugs and alcohol and, you know, all of the other things that can just poison your life. Right. But if you take the lesson and, you know, you just start to enjoy the process of it all, that, you know, when you jump in that, you know, 70 degree water, that Pila, right, after a 16-hour day riding horseback or working the chutes, you know, it's that much sweeter. Right. And so it's like when you kind of taste that, you know, that 70 degree water, you know, for lack of a better example, you know, after a long day, right. It's better than just jumping in it when you've been sitting in the air conditioning all day. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. The reward of hard work in that case was getting in the cold water.
Yeah.
Right. But now it's something different and it's something Absolutely. That still has the same appeal. But the thing about it is listening to you talk about that and knowing that mm-hmm. still today has bearing on decisions, right? Like to mm-hmm. to see you go, that felt good. And remember, like I can see you remembering jumping in to the, mm-hmm. the water after a hard day. And the feeling of all that and the lesson that created is just spectacular. And I wish more people actually had opportunities to kind of do Absolutely. That and experience some hard things and some difficult things, because I think we live in a world that's too easy now, personally. And I'm probably part of the problem, even with my kids. I try to be hard on them, but you know, they're just fine. Right. And mm-hmm. even if they come and do restoration with us or whatever the case may be, it's not that hard for them.
Sure.
So I appreciate that for sure. So I graduated high school, went to Texas, economics degree. Mm-hmm. What were you, it's interesting because we had another guy that was on, graduated, has a logistics degree. He was mm-hmm. working for heavy construction though, and doing purchase orders on things for road work stuff. Mm-hmm. And then started his own restoration company at the time. But in your case, what were you doing actually at the time where you're like, I'm done with this. I'm not fulfilled with this anymore. I want to do something different.
Yeah, I was working for a fintech company in the logistics kind of trucking diesel fuel savings space, right? The company was called Mudflap, still called Mudflap. It's the top discount program for independent over the road truck drivers, very hard to reach. And essentially what, you know, I was responsible for was going out to the network of independent truck stop owners. And, you know, I think the chain that we brought in like towards the end of my career there was Travel Centers of America. And so that was like kind of the one big player that we brought in. But the idea was to offer a discount to the folks that needed it, right? The little guys. But they made up the lion's share of trucks on the road. So it was a super interesting business model, super bright founders. You know, I love, you know, kind of building it, right? But like, every, you know, people are places, right? For a reason, a season, or a lifetime, right? And for me, that was a season, you know, with two-sided mobile marketplace, right? There's challenges and things like that. And, you know, one of the founders had left that business. One of the reasons I, you know, kind of really got involved. Some things changed, right? And it's just not where I wanted to be for forever. Like I thought tech was the answer, right? And it's what most people are kind of told, like the path to go to after you graduate, you know, a university and you make, you know, $40,000 a year base. And then you've got this upside of commission. I did really, really well. And that's definitely not where I ended up, but I had to take 100 steps back to take a step forward, right? And I was willing to bet on myself and got into the space and knew I needed to learn the trade. So I started off as a project manager, as a sales rep, then kind of moved up to chief sales officer, then went back to project manager for a larger organization because that's how they groom their people. And just realized that this is something that people need and that the bar was so low, right? You know, everyone kind of hears about the roofing stories, like basically an industry where people wear masks, right? Where, you know, people should be wearing capes, right? It's like, it is one of the most important things on your property. And if you can just build that trust, right? And build partnerships with people and, you know, do the free repair, the $300 repair, not just always trying to sell a re-roof, right? Because it benefits you, but doesn't necessarily benefit them, just cost them money. You can create value. And so that's what we focused on, is like just focusing on our people. Whereas it's like something that I really didn't get at many of the organizations I was a part of previously in the tech space. And it's something that, you know, I identified roofing as just being this like personal development in disguise, right? Every day is a challenge, right? And it's like, I was comfortable with that, right? And I wanted to be around people that like doing hard things, and every day there's a new challenge, right? And we get to, sure, we get to overcome that.
Yeah. Find a new path for something that you've already done multiple times, because that one's not working this time. Exactly. How did you make the pivot? Like, what was the decision process to go into roofing? I know you went to some, you know, job fair type thing, but from the financial world, where I'm assuming mm-hmm. you sat behind a computer and did a lot of that and made phone calls and coordinated things, to being in the field.
Yeah. It was definitely like a transition. There was like a little bit of kind of overlap. You know, I just got back from a vacation with the family, and then I, you know, launched into, you know, a completely new industry. Part of it was like, you know, part of the reason for the transition was I was tired of being behind a Zoom, you know, screen, right? Looking in the mirror.
Hey, here we are. Hey.
12 hour days, you know, and I wanted to be out in the field. I, you know, from like a personal health perspective, I was like, I need more vitamin D. I need to be grounding. I need to be outside, you know, kind of where I enjoy being. Even if it is 160 or 180 degrees on a roof, like I'm going to be getting that sun. I'm going to be sweating. Sweating's good for you, right? And I'm going to be doing something different, something a little bit more simple, right? But I'm going to be able to leverage all of this background and expertise. Yeah, it was definitely interesting, because I went from, you know, 12 hours behind a computer screen, like knocking out proposals and being, you know, strategic business development, to being out in the field for 14, sometimes 16 hour days, right? You know, starting an install at, you know, 6, 7 a.m. and you're not wrapping up till 8 or 9 if it was a big job. Plus you're, you know, doing all the business development, you're kind of building a business in a business just being a sales rep, right? So just identified, you know, a better way, and, you know, got to leverage some of that expertise. But now it's funny, I, you know, still spend some time out in the field, but for some of the larger opportunities or for training, luckily I have a great team that, you know, deploys out in the field, and they're kind of doing that stuff. But I'm working on the more strategic stuff now, but I still like to go and get out in the field. It's, you know, it's a little bit different because I'm building something, and, you know, I get to be, you know, receptive to my people and like what they're finding, and hey, if we can do something a different way, which is just something I didn't have in previous roles.
It's funny you say that because I really enjoy being in the field as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
Because part of that is that interaction with the customer that you're helping mm-hmm. that I enjoy. But I have found out that truthfully, like transparently, the process goes smoother if I'm not there. At this point in my career, my team, we've set the processes in place and things go smooth and things go better if I don't throw a cog in the wheel.
Yeah.
While, you know, I'm interjecting whoever I am and think that I'm special or better than they are mm-hmm. or whatever the case may be. It's pretty funny. Okay. So you made the transition and you talked early in the conversation about, you know, creating some SOPs and some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Where did the SOPs come from? Where did you learn that you needed the SOPs? Is this something you just decided, hey, I need to do this? Like, how did you get mm-hmm. to the point of going, okay, I can't do all these things. I can't replicate myself and continue to grow a business. How do I talk through that process with me?
Yeah. So one of the companies that I worked for was called Concero Global. So they were backed by Boston Ventures, BV Investment Group, is what I think they're called now. But we did outsource finance and accounting for private equity and VC-backed, you know, software and service companies. And so you would look at each of the different pillars, order to cash, accounts payable, T&E, all of those things, right? And let's say they had NetSuite and they had all these other systems and this accounting team. So basically, we would come in with the people, systems, and process, marry all of them together, right? Because you need all of those to be successful. And then we would implement it in 30 to 90 days, a completely brand new accounting, finance and accounting function. And we would do it with 100% success rate, right? So it was, you know, time savings, right? A guarantee, which, you know, normally you're implementing an ERP system. Maybe you have a 10% chance at successfully doing that. And then there was a labor arbitrage component. And so one of the biggest pieces that we did was this assessment process where we understood, and obviously the onboarding, we'd go deeper, but like we had to understand exactly how the process worked. And then we would do a gap analysis. We'd figure out, okay, hey, can we remove these pieces? Can we optimize this? Okay, now that we've done all that from a process perspective, what can we automate? And so it was through that and looking under the hood of hundreds and hundreds of highly successful businesses to understand that like the key to success was the process. What,
talk to just real quick. What did those businesses do? Mostly software companies?
Mostly software and service. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So
they were service companies too.
Service companies too, but mainly okay. Software. Yeah.
Okay. Carry on. Just you're looking under the hood of hundreds of businesses, thousands of businesses, yeah. whatever the number was.
Yeah. And you're just finding what makes them successful. And part of it was having a repeatable process, right? Is, you know, showing people that are coming to the business, right? This is what you need to do to be successful. Here's the playbook for this. You don't need a process for everything, right? You need it for the critical tasks. And you know, really documenting what that looks like so that, you know, things aren't slipping through the cracks. There's consistency, right? Now these processes change, right? For high growth businesses quite a bit, but you still need to have that process. Otherwise, everyone's moving in a somewhat similar direction, but not the same direction, right? So you can't grow as fast if you're not all working in the same direction. Like what's the definition of a company, right? It's a collective group of people like towards a common goal. And yeah, it was just, you know, some of those learnings. And even though the business was different, what I found was in the roofing or the service space, not a lot of people were operating at as high of a level as some of these software companies were, right? There was documented process procedures and workflows. There were automations, whereas like I went and worked for the biggest re-roofing company in the US and there was almost none of it, right? And, you know, obviously saw the opportunity there.
Sure. It's shocking, right? When you start looking at some of those things, you're like, how did you get to be this successful and you still yeah. carry a manila folder in your truck to know what's happening on a project?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. No, but there's a lot of that exists in the space. That's the reason we even do this is because we mm-hmm. know there's a lot of it. We know there are guys that are, you know, trying to jump out and do their own thing in the services mm-hmm. space, and they're going to need some help. And we feel like we can provide a podcast and talk to guys like you mm-hmm. and learn some tips and tricks and they can benefit from what you've learned. And I contend that starting processes, establishing your processes very early on is the most beneficial. I didn't do yeah. that. What we did when we started our restoration company was we decided that we were going to, I was having to do all the work, right? I was doing the business development, just like you were. I was in the business development. I was slinging the fans. I was making sure stuff was happening in the field to get teams where they needed to be. I was creating an estimate. I was talking to the adjuster. I was talking to the customer. And then I would have to have meetings with my teams in order to be able to go, okay, what's the next step? Where are we at with this particular thing? What's going on here? Do we need to ask for this check? Should we get the first draw? You know, all the things that we were working on the restoration space, and decided that, hey, we need to create some processes. But initially, before I did that, the first person I hired, I taught them to do the exact same thing I was doing, which is creating an estimate and talking to the customer, and then you're slinging the fans and doing the other stuff. And that, mm-hmm. that doesn't work, because you can't scale that way with 70 people doing the exact same thing, because they're not all doing it exactly the same way. They're just doing the same types of work. And then we realized we needed to create processes, and that led obviously to tools and business software and things that we built for all of that. I would say starting processes, creating the processes for what you're trying to do, or mimicking somebody else's processes initially, are very important early on, because that's going to keep you from running into major hiccups along the way. Would you agree with that statement? Or
absolutely. Like, I think one of the biggest things, you know, I go all in on is mentorship. Even if it costs me a whole hell of a lot of money, it's like, I'd rather learn from other people's mistakes than having my own, right? Like, one of the guys in the space, Adam Benzeman, on his podcast, and, you know, you can get mentorship for free too, right? It can be podcasts, YouTube, whatever. One of the biggest things that, you know, one of the things that he mentioned in one of his podcasts is the first roof he ever did, it was open, it was down to the deck, or they were redecking it, I can't remember, but it rained. And the house got completely ruined. He could have packed his stuff up and he could have gone and, you know, not taken that lesson. But instead, they did all the right things. They took care of the customer, right? They did the right thing. And he got a bunch more jobs out of it. He was like, now that I can see, like, you know, what you've done in a, you know, not ideal situation, I know that, you know, when it's an easy, like, you're going to do the right thing too. And, you know, that's what it's all about, right? Is like taking the lesson and learning from other people's, you know, failures, right? Not just your own, mentorship. And, you know, that way you can grow a lot faster with less hiccups and protect your brand and name and just do the right thing for people.
Absolutely. And I, you know, a lot of this stuff you can go figure out 100% on your own. We have a podcast here that you're on, mm-hmm. that people can go look at all the episodes and watch however many hours of podcasts that exist and find the parts and pieces. They can run a ChatGPT search for a lot of this at this point now too, right? There's a lot of different opportunities that they can learn. What are the things they need to be looking out for and how do they do it? And they can do it all on their own, 100%. Mm-hmm. But since time is money, the speed to get these things done well, mentorship is vital in my opinion as well. And we pay for mentorship. Like, we're looking to try to learn things, and we're always looking for those people that are more successful than we've been. Because, I mean, if you've built a $3 million business, how are you going to help me grow my business? I mean, I've already passed that. So I can't have you do that. But if you've built a $150 million business, maybe I can have a conversation with you and maybe you can mentor me on some things. And so there's ways to navigate some of those things and parts and pieces. A lot of really great, talented people out there that have done that. I know more of those guys in the restoration space and just in the business world than I do in the roofing space, but mm-hmm. you know, those guys exist for sure. What's the biggest thing you wish you had known before you started?
Biggest that I didn't have to have it all figured out. Right. That I just needed to like take the step and look, like, my background kind of has helped shape like how successful and how fast we've grown and all of those things. But it's like, you can figure it out as you go while you're flying the plane, right? Like, yeah, sure. Without the foundation, it's more difficult. If I had started a company at 20 years old, right? Like, probably would have crashed and burned it into the ground, right? Because of the process and because of what I experienced, you know, I didn't have to have it all figured out. I had a consultant that I leaned on that knew some of the business acumen and language and all, you know, some of the gaps that I had. We've got a president on our team that used to do turnarounds for service-based companies, right? He's owned several businesses. You just need to bring in the people around you, right? You don't have to be strong at everything, because few people are. And you just have to get out of your own way and trust and let those people, obviously, do your diligence on the trust factor, right? But don't just partner with anyone. But yeah, you don't have to have it all figured out. Just take that first step. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is I just created a video that we're working on. Like, we do quite a bit of different content for different things and parts and pieces. And one of those mm-hmm. that I just created the content on was essentially talking about the fact that, you know, you're the reason your company isn't growing. You're preventing your company from growing because you're the cog that's trying to keep everything mm-hmm. under your control, and you don't know everything. You don't have the ability to answer all the questions, because none of us can. We're all ignorant to something. And then to not lean on somebody else that has that experience or knows more than you, because You don't want to be perceived as ignorant or unintelligent or whatever. For whatever reason, there's something about the service industry that makes everybody want to pretend that they know everything. And they're unwilling to ask for it. I'm easy to be like, hey, man, I try to be the dumbest guy in the room because that helps over and over again. And it's pretty easy for me to do. I mean, because honestly, I mean, I'm pretty good at being the dumbest guy in the room. But you learn so much more when you are willing to ask instead of just, if something doesn't make sense, ask questions. If you see somebody doing something different, ask them and tell me why you're doing that. And I think it's super valuable. But I appreciate the comment of, you know, you don't have it all figured out. Like I've said for years, we're building the airplane in the air. You know, we don't have landing gear yet and we're running out of fuel, but we're going to figure out how to get fuel while we're here or get the landing gear finished while we're going. But like I've made mistakes to the point of waiting too long to do something. And it's cost us because I wanted it to be perfect or I wanted it to be right. Or I wanted to understand it and it puts you behind. And I would commend that statement of you don't have to have it all figured out. If you're ready to pull the trigger, you're ready to do something different. I was on a phone call just a little while ago with a guy that's trying to leave the medical world. Same kind of thing with you, right? They're cutting commissions for him. He does medical sales and they're cutting commissions and he's trying to see about getting into the restoration space, but he's anxious about it and he doesn't know all the things. And I'm like, look, dude, you don't have to know all the things. So I get it.
You need to have mentorship, right? Or you need to be a student of the game. And if you don't have it internally within a company where you start, like what I did is I reached out to other roofing and restoration company owners and I asked them like, what were the biggest things that I asked them meaningful, powerful questions. And I said, hey, I'm really good at business development. If you want to try a new strategy, I'm happy to help you any way I can. So offering some sort of value, not just asking, but a lot of times you can just ask. But if you just take the first step and you don't have it all figured out, and then you act like you know everything, you will fail. But if you're a student of the game, you'll constantly improve and learn and grow. And
to your point, you know, it's, and I think that's valid. Like there are places to do that and places that you can't do that. Like there's an entire social media page where, you know, you're going to get attacked if you ask a question because aren't you supposed to be the expert? And I'm like, for the love. And I even told that guy today, I'm like, listen, you got to be cautious about how you do that and where you go. I mean, you can answer that with, no, I'm brand new. I'm trying to look at getting into this space and, you know, I'm just trying to learn. I'm not an expert yet. No, I'm not certified in anything yet. Right. But you can get attacked and it can be problematic, but mentorship is important. And asking questions, I think, is important. If somebody attacks you,
absolutely,
who cares, right? Be you, go do your thing.
I've never been jealous of a hater, right? Or wanted something that they...
The funny thing about that, and I say this to people all the time, is generally speaking, the people that are talking the most shit to you are the people that are not doing as well as you.
Yeah.
The guys that are better than you and doing better than you, they're not talking shit to you. For the most part, they're trying to help you. They're going to reach out a hand or they're not worried about you. Some dude that's doing $150 million a year, he's not going to talk shit about you because he's got so many other things to worry about. They didn't need to be involved in that, all of that. What's the single best process you think you've implemented? Or the most important process?
I think one of the most important processes, right? Because we're an early company, right? It's like teaching folks how to build partnerships, like for example, with insurance agents. We're in a world where insurance is tightening up in the restoration space, as you know, and we want to go with the grain, not against the grain, not bite the hand that feeds us. I think this process of showing our team like how to build relationships, ask the additional question, right? Of like, hey, reach out to these insurance agents. We have clients that they want to work with. We just put a new roof over their head, right? Why don't we just ask them if they know or like their insurance agent? If they had an ACV, actual cash value policy, and a high deductible, and they didn't know about it, they probably don't know or like their insurance agent after that, right? And so that's an opportunity for us to, you know, refer it over to one of our partners. But really building those relationships and asking them. Some insurance agents, like most of them, do want that additional client, right? But they want a true partnership where you're going to take care of them. You're going to give them honest feedback. There was hail damage or wind damage or there wasn't. These are the photos, being proactive, full transparency. You do not need to throw the wool over anyone's eyes, like educate, honor them, all of those things. building those partnerships in a space where there aren't many partnerships, it's very transactional and people knock doors and, you know, cold call if they're really ahead of the curve, right? Which we're doing way more than that now. But just building those partnerships, like, I think it's like implementing some of those processes of how to do those things and just showing them through that process and that playbook to best serve your partners has been one of the most impactful from a business development. Now ask me that same question again in 6 months, right? Where we're really doing a full overhaul on all our processes in production and not over ordering materials and, you know, them getting stolen and stuff like that. And then on the accounts payable side, but that answer will change, but sure, because we're a newer company, business development and true partnerships and, you know, even like walking them through, like, you know, the estimates that we get back from insurance, right? And if there's enough there, like, let's just give them the free upgrade to the class four. We don't want to, we're coming from a place of abundance. We don't want to re-roof that person's property again. Put on a malarkey class four shingle, right? And then we'll get the neighbors, right? If you do the right things will follow. But it's like showing them the process kind of like, hey, if you do this a year later, 2 years later, if something else happens, you're probably going to get the whole neighborhood because Bill's going to be the only guy that's, you know, not re-roofing his property. But most people don't think like that. So it's processes and just kind of strategy and doing the right thing.
Yeah. And I love that. I mean, that's one of the things that we try to live by is like, do the right thing for the right reason. The rest of it will work itself out. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, that's always true. You know, we still say around here, no good deed goes unpunished because you'll do the right thing for the right reason. And somebody's going to be an asshole about it. And that's just the reality of how the world works at some point. But for the most part, that's the right way to go. And I appreciate that. So creating partnerships, I think, is vital and important. Mm-hmm. Is there anything as you've been on this journey that has just blindsided you? You're like, oh my gosh, I didn't see that coming. I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah. I think, you know, luckily I haven't had anyone like steal from me yet. Right. I think we've done a good job of hiring and onboarding. I think one of the big ones is someone in your circle, right? Someone that you kind of know, right? Like decides not to pay you for a job that you did after it's complete. And it really like, it hurts you, right? Like deep down because of like what you've done for them, you know, bending over backwards, but you're always going to have, and like the lesson from that is like, when people do things that, you know, you just don't expect or, you know, are just kind of like bad things, right? You know, maybe their cat died, right? Maybe they have something going on in their life. And like, I think there's a level of forgiveness that you have to have, but also like you have to protect your business and not working with every customer. You know, at the beginning we were working with just about, you know, small roofs, big roofs, like didn't matter if it was, you know, an hour out, like we were driving for that. And I was doing that 11 square roof and getting up on that roof and tossing the shingles to finish the job by 3 p.m. because we said we would, right? But, you know, as you grow and you learn some of these lessons, you get those gut feelings, right? It's like, hey, I'm probably not going to work with this customer because they're not the right customer for me. They care about price alone, right? And someone else has come in. And if their AC unit breaks or they get a flat tire, do you think that other contractor is going to pay for your tire or your new AC unit? No, because they don't have the margin. And they'll probably be out of business in a year and they promise you a 20-year workmanship warranty. So it's like, I think, yeah, those were some of the blindsided things, but we learn from them.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting because it's so hard to do, right? When you're new and you want every job because you're like, I gotta have the revenue. And then you get to a level of maturity in your business where you're like, man, not all jobs are good jobs. And some just burn you and some, you know, are problematic. And we live in a litigious society and we have people that'll sue you just because they want to sue you because they know they're going to, you're going to have to pay them eventually because whether you did anything wrong or not. Right. So that's the world we live in, unfortunately, now. And they know, hey,
And I just had like a thought too, and I wonder like why people in this space, right? Roofing, restoration, just the service business in general, like why do they rip people off, right? Well, maybe it's like they didn't take the lesson, right? Maybe they got, you know, wool pulled over their eyes by a client that didn't pay them. And then they think every client is like that, right? Instead of taking the lesson of like, hey, I'm just going to be more selective of the clients I work with. They just start ripping people off because they've like they've just created this idea of their client, and you know, you just got to take the lesson and kind of move on and make it, you know, make that lesson make you a better person, not a worse off person.
Yeah. And you can't just, like in our space, we say, one of the things that we say about restoration is we live in a world where things didn't go the way they're supposed to. If things always went the way they're supposed to, we wouldn't have a job, mm-hmm. but they don't. And so we live in a world where our goal is to try to be in a position where we can take those things and learn from them correctly. And hopefully it's not so detrimental, it's going to put us out of business. And you learn as you deal with customers, as you deal with the world, you start to see kind of these trends and consistencies, if they're going to act this way. And sometimes they still trick you, right? Sometimes you miss it.
Yeah.
But if you get it early on, like I remember answering the phone one time for a lady. It's like, well, I'm a contractor and I know how this works. And I just need to get somebody out here to do extraction right now. Like, I don't think that we're the right fit for you, because I'm trying to ask questions about how many people I need to get out there to do this extraction. Do you have one small bathroom flood, or do you have a 20,000 square foot warehouse that's flooded? I don't know. And you won't answer questions. You just want me to send somebody. So I get it, man. It's so interesting and so unique to do that. And I really appreciate that statement, right?
Yeah.
Because it's important that we, you know, don't take all the work, don't take all the jobs, learn from the lessons when they come through, and then still be there to help people, because other people still need your help. Don't let that one person prevent you from helping the rest of them, which is significant. We're close to our time, dude. I don't want to take too much of your time. I feel like we could talk for a long time. I appreciate the conversation.
Absolutely.
Is there one last piece of advice that you would want to share with anyone that was trying to jump into the entrepreneurial world, or has, and is just struggling, trying to break that next lid?
Yeah, I think you don't have to like go out and invent a new product, right? Or a new service line, or, you know, like you don't have to be like the company that comes out to do drones to clean solar panels. Like, you can start off cleaning solar panels and getting on the roof and then expand. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It was so funny because I was in the product space and the software space for so long. And you know, you've got these brilliant entrepreneurs like coming out with these new concepts and new ideas to automate and, you know, do all these things, but you don't have to do all that. Like, you can go into the roofing or the HVAC space. Like, we've got a shortage across the US of like 200,000 electricians, I think.
And yeah.
And I've hired 5 electricians, right? And I finally found my good one. And he came in and did the same amount of work in 5-10 minutes that the other guys took 2 hours and couldn't figure it out. Like, be a student of the game and, like, you know, figure out, like, go work for some other people. I love the trades. Once you learn enough, right? Like, learn enough to be dangerous and then go and do it. But yeah, find that good mentorship and just take that first step.
Yeah. Bunch of good info, man, in this conversation. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the, you know, you don't have to know everything. Get some mentorship. Do the right thing. There's lots of good nuggets in this. And that's what we're shooting for on the podcast, is for somebody to just have a couple of nuggets they could take away from this. And I think you offered them several. And I appreciate that greatly, my friend.
Yeah. Thank you, Clint.
James, thanks for being on. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good, brother.
Take care.